Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. Well, we've survived another school year. This is our sort of like annual end of the school year show, the last sort of Sunday in June. Most schools are out, and some most probably have been out for a while. So we've had some time to reflect. You survived. As a student, as a parent, as a teacher, as an administrator, as a community. So here we are. And as I said just a moment ago, we've tried here on War Report to raise a question of, at the end of the school year, where are we? And particularly, the question I put to you right now is, where are we, the resistance, at the end of this school year compared to the end of last year school year? Let's go back. Last year, this time, where were we? Fast forward to now, where are we? So when we compare those two, we should be able to come up with some type of, I love this word, assessment in terms of where we are, what this year was compared to last year, and I really, really want to hear from anyone, everyone. You know that we here at the War Report, sure, we will give you an assessment, and I'll take the lead on that. But to me, it's more important for the audience to hear from its own members. I'm a teacher, sure. Have been for most of my life. But hearing it from me versus hearing it from you, I'm a parent. Hearing it from a parent to parent, we don't get many students calling, but you get the point that hearing from you probably carries more weight and validity than just hearing it from me. And, you know, that old she or he's one of us. And I can identify with what he said or she said. I feel you, that whole thing. So it would be nice. And I'm putting it very politely. It would be damn nice if, you know, you guys would come in and share with us your assessment to that question, as opposed to letting me do it for everyone else and all. So I'm going to give you our call-in number. And the call-in number, of course, is toll-free. And it's the number that you can call in, be a part of the show, and still hear the show. Versus another number that we have where you can only, when you dial in that number, you can only listen to the show. So the call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Let me repeat. 888-627-6008. Okay. We are here. And I'm going to put this question out to you, and I want you to think about this. If you don't respond right away, but I want you to think about this. If you were asked today, just say the war was over today, and next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, your children, your grandchildren were to ask you, what did you do in the war? Were you a resistor? Did you resist? Did you cooperate with the other side? What did you do? That question may not, you know, be put to you in the future or even right now, but it's a question that World War II and other wars, when kids were asked their parents or they asked their father, you know, Daddy, what did you do in the war? And fathers would tell their kids if they were actually in the war itself or whether or not they were stateside, but they were in the military and they were developing and shipping supplies, whatever their contribution was to the war. They would invariably be asked that question, and they would have a story to tell. And so I'm saying to you guys and ladies, you may be at some point asked that question, you know, Mommy, Daddy, what did you do in the war? And so I mean, go as far as the Great War, because as I've said time and time again, the war on public education, this is just a theater of the war. There's a much larger war that's being waged and has been for decades. And it's just our turn now. We have talked about this, I don't know how many times, whether or not you want to, I say the formal declaration was the signing of No Child Left Behind. But before that, there was all kinds of things going back to, I say, the Sputnik era, when teachers were first blamed on a wholesale basis for not educating our kids to the point where they're competitive to the Russians, because the Russians beat us to outer space, man flight out of space. And then, the Reagan era of a nation at risk, and on and on and on. But here we are now, and this is the war. And as I've said from the very first show, this to me is a war that is... aim is to the privatization, or this end goal is the privatization of everyone and everything, humanity and the planet. And it's just our time. They pivoted to us being public education as the target that is most desirable for the last almost two decades. But when I say us, I'm talking about the ed community made up of the parents, the communities, the teachers, the students, the administration, public education as ideology, as a social institution. That's what I mean when I say, you know, the war on us. And then the resistance. What kind of resistance can we put up? What kind of resistance have we put up so far? And the question, as you got our promotion, I raised the question in terms of, is there a real resistance? Has there ever been a real resistance? And if so, who's been resisting? Where? Where has the resistance been? Has it been in a given state or a given community or a given region? Coming out of a single house or what? You know, where has this resistance been and how? What form of resistance has there been? And what I didn't put in the promotion is the most important for me part of this is why? If there was a resistance from an individual, from a group, from thousands, millions, why? As I've said here, I don't know how many times, of the who, when, where, what, how, why is the most important question to me always. It gets at motivation. It gets at why people do the things that they do, how they're doing it, or when, where, and et cetera. It's always a why. So these are the kinds of questions that I thought were very, very appropriate for an end-of-the-year discussion. Also, what is your assessment? Are we winning this war in terms of the resistance? I mean, has the resistance been kicking ass? I'm hesitating because I want you to hear what I just said. Are we losing the war? Or is it a standoff? In other words, are we pushing back to the point where they have not been able to advance and the best that they can do is hold their grounds, whatever gains that they've had at this point, and we're pushing to the point where they can't advance any further? Are we at a standoff here? And you have to have some feelings, you have to have some insight, some belief in what I've just said in terms of these questions. You have to. There's no way, as a teacher, as a parent, as a community activist, or in a community that's been devastated by the war, that it has impacted you, your family. It hasn't already impacting your future. You have to. You're not a zombie. Well, take that back. I may be being more generous than I should be, but you have to have some feelings about this, and particular teachers. I mean, this is your life we're talking about here. This is your future, your career. Okay. And to the rest of the audience, the universe, we're talking about our kids. We're talking about our communities. We're talking about our democracy. We're talking about the future of humanity. These are not light questions. And most importantly, we're talking about what is the going phrase now. I mean, everyone is using this phrase. We're talking about your lived experience, your narrative. What's your story? As you answer these questions that I put out, as you reflect on them, as you have the paradigm here, the paradigm here is awareness, understanding, emotional engagement, individual and or collective social action. What is happening and what do you think? We have a caller. Hello, caller.
Yes, hello, hello. Thank you for doing this fabulous work with the War Report on Education. It really is important. And I just wanted to let you know that there's the Popular Resistance Newsletter Group, and they're affiliated with healthoverprofit.org. That's healthoverprofit.org, really a powerful group. It originated out of Occupy Wall Street, and they're not getting enough attention, so thank you for this time to interject some information. And they also have HR, federal level, HR 676. It's single payer for all. And Representative Conyers out of New York put it into effect on the end of January and this year. And over 114 representatives have already signed it. So that's one group to as a way into Health Over Profit. And then there's also CompassionCities.org, and there's a movement for wellness centers to be developed. So they have a new education, teaching, training programs for community services. And with the new single-payer health care bill for these community services with single-payer, and with the wellness centers for more art, music, singing, dance, movement therapies, multicultural arts, and all these different programs that can be integrated for wellness for the youth, and new jobs and activities also being developed for new health and human services and social healer services at heart and soul level. So evolving the evolution of our species and putting out about more sports, not war. So that's another avenue. And then there's a big movement out there that I wanted to let people know about, and it includes education so much. So it's and healthcare and banking and the drug situation where in Portugal, it's Michael Moore's movie. It's all this is comes from Michael Moore's movie, Where to Invade Next. All the government policies for their penal industrial complex there. In Portugal, they don't arrest for any drugs at all anymore and have other activities and wellness programs so that they alleviate the addictions and most of the mental health care issues. And the whole community is relaxed. And the education programs for sex, for teaching kids how to play, it's not really Waldorf or Montessori, so to speak, but yet they add in critical thinking, and there's no Common Core, standardized testing. They don't even have homework, and they teach the children to play, and they're so much more energized and relaxed. They learn a lot more languages and a lot more skill training programs, but they're actually teaching children to play. So it goes on in the education and even food preparation programs in the schools for kids. I think it was in France. It's just Michael Moore's movie, Where to Invade Next, all the government policies that are integrated.
Can I ask you a question, caller? Where are you calling from?
Oregon.
Oregon?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And are you a teacher?
A spiritual teacher and a healing arts teacher.
Okay. I won't ask you your name unless you want to give it. But as it relates to, you know, everything that you said, especially those bits and pieces as related to education, these are instances of what I would consider part of the broad picture of resisting by going on the offense, the programs, some of the programs that you mentioned, where they may not be specific to education per se, but they are the kinds of things that, in the bigger picture, represent an effort on the part of some of us to resist the privatization of humanity and the planet. And that's great for you to share with us the organizations that you identified and I will invite you to, if you go to our Facebook page, The War Report on Public Education, and maybe even list some of those organizations so that others can seek to join or support, because that, to me, is a form of resistance. And more importantly,
I'm not on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn, and there's 33. I have over 3,300 different wellness programs, and there's another one. It's called Voices in Sonoma, that need to be taught and trained. And there's a Critical Thinking for Children magazine that's out there. That's just awesome. So yeah, there's a lot of different changes, but we can't just resist. We have to focus on the solutions. It's really critical that people understand they can resist what's wrong, but they have to change the systems and the governing, processing of the new government policies that need to be integrated. We need to come together and focus on them to manifest them.
Oh, I totally agree that we can come together over a lot of issues, education being one, but many of the issues that you just mentioned also, that will bring us together in terms of the large, large numbers that we need on a local, state, national level. It's what I have talked about in the past, in that for the various groups, if we have a single plank in our platform that is of crucial interest to Group A, and then we have one for Group B, C, D, all the way down, so that the whole, once the platform is put together, there's something there for everyone. We will then have the numbers that we need to mount a resistance. We have the numbers to put the other side on the defensive, on the retreat. So I thank you for that. And again, if you're not on Facebook or email or what have you, I am worried for this. You can give us some information, and we will share.
Okay, there's 7,000 different indivisible groups that you can connect with. The indivisible groups are 7,000 now.
Well, it would help us that, you know, if we could be able to get in touch with, and I say we, people who are listening, being able to read up on these groups and decide to join or support whatever way we can. But I thank you for...
Okay, there's two more. There's the People's Budget. You can Google it. And there's also the People's Action Group. They're really important. They're tied into the Move On movements and working families. So they're all available, too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye now. Well, you heard from someone else, folks. What she was saying, at least I'm going to say speaking for her, but my summation would be that there are a lot of resistance out there, not all of which she was identifying relating to education, but there is resistance. So how do we translate that to what is our interest here on the War Report, and that is the resistance to education, the war on education and all. So the question's out there, and you can call in and have a conversation as opposed to having me give you my views upon it. And when I say my views, sometimes I'm speaking for the team war. And so but I also try and tell you when I'm speaking solely for me and not for them, so some of the things I say may be very controversial. So, but anyway, let me go ahead and say one of the things that, and I've talked about this in the past, in 2015 when I started the People Stories Research, and that lasted for several months, I made several trips. And this question that I put out wasn't asked, but what happened, state after state, city after city, basically provides an answer to the question. One of the things that was overwhelmingly evident was that people, I'm speaking of teachers now, were afraid. They were afraid to stand up, speak out. They were afraid to bring attention to themselves and their attitudes and their feelings, especially I'm talking about people who didn't support Common Core, people who didn't support the high-stakes testing, didn't support the value-added measures that were being applied to teachers in terms of evaluating teachers. They didn't approve of Teach for America coming in. They didn't approve a lot of things, but they were afraid to speak up and take a stand. Fear. It was rampant. People didn't want to go to school, teachers. Teachers were taking Valium, or whatever it is, before they left home, and then while they were at school, and as soon as they left school, in order to be able to make it through the day. The anxiety levels were up. The stress levels were up. Teachers, some of them even asked me when I was getting ready to interview them, could I blank out their faces? Could I show just their back? They had something to say, but they were fearful because what would possibly happen to them in terms of their jobs, their careers. And also, there were teachers in their schools who were for Common Core, who was for high-stakes testing. And so they were afraid that they would be alienated if they spoke up on their own. I got it then, I get it now. And from what I've been hearing this year, it hasn't changed in terms of the fear is still out there. One of the things that I hear all the time from teachers is that they are so pissed off with their fellow teachers for not getting involved in the resistance at their schools, at their district, and instead those teachers are laying back and letting someone else do it. Let someone else be out front, be the face of would-be opposition. And I hear this all the time. I'm dropping out. I'm waiting to see if someone else is going to step up. I'm tired of being the big mouth at school meetings, at school, in the community. No one else is stepping up. They're letting me be the target. We've seen that this year. Actually, it was in the last year when, let me just put it this way. How many groups are there today, this day, compared to this time last year that are active, they are actively trying to mount a resistance? Think about it. We've lost some groups. We've lost some individuals. Think about it. You know probably who I'm talking about. Were you active last year, the year before, 2014, 2015? Are you active today? Were you silent 2014, 2015, 16, going into 17? Have you ever been part of the resistance as an individual or part of a group? If not, why not? I don't want to sound like a broken record, because I've been talking about this for 3.5 years, almost 4 years now, in terms of this is a war on us that should never have been. This is a war that had we had an awareness, understanding of it, had we had leaders, we had enough at our, I'll say our heyday, our the height, 10 million union teachers. And I don't know how many teachers in states that they don't have unions, but we had a formidable army that could have mounted one hell of a resistance. So much so that there never would have been a full-fledged war like it is now. We had the numbers, and we could have gotten double, triple, quadruple our numbers if we had reached out to parents to let them know what was going on. Relatives, former students. We could have had not just 10 million teachers. We could have had 30, 40, 50 million easily across the country that would have given us a formidable army. But we didn't. And that's why we are here where we are today. And back to that original question. And I picked 2014 because that's when we came on, we being the War Report, that's when we came on the air. And of course, these things were happening to us way before the War Report came on the air. And so if you want to pick 2002, the signing of No Child Left Behind as the formal declaration of war, and if you were teaching, what have you done? What have you, the individual, done in the 10, 12, 15 years since the signing of No Child Left Behind? Okay. We have another caller. Hello, caller.
Hi, caller. Hi, James. It's Joanne.
Joanne.
From Connecticut. Yep. Hi. And I'm not prepped to talk today, but I felt like I really had to call in because the plea to call in is so great. I think the problem with my calling in is that, the state of the war and the state of the resistance is really bleak. We're losing, and we're losing big time. I posted on Facebook today, as I'm doing my own end-of-the-year reflections, that this whole time period from, 2000 to 2017, almost the last 20, actually I'm going into my 20th year of teaching, so I can talk about it as the 20-year experience. It really could be called the Great Education Massacre. We've just lost more and more and more good teachers every year I've been in here, and it seems to have come in waves. Where we are right now, as far as I can see it in my situation, is we're in the stage of this war now where every teacher needs to be plugged into the internet and every student needs to be plugged into the internet, and we're transitioning into a time where, unfortunately, human teacher contact and relationship is going to be, or is already, right before our eyes, secondary to what the powers that be think should come out of an educational experience. you know, on the good side, you know, those of us that are still in the war are fighting away and, you know, fighting around the system and figuring out ways to be creative, to connect with kids, to still be teachers. But it's getting hard. It's exhausting. It's exhausting, James, being out there in the classroom. And I'm sure it's exhausting for parents to be out there in the fight, you know, trying to protect their kids. And I'm sure it's exhausting for those administrators that are still trying to resist this. That's all I have to say right now.
Oh, that's enough. That's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, as you said, you've been in it almost, you know, 20 years now. You've
going
seen
into
a
my
lot.
20th year, yep.
Yeah, you've seen a lot. It's certainly different today than it was when you started and your first few years and all. And so you've got that, you know, lived experience that, and you can answer the question that I originally posed. When your grandchildren say to you, you know, what did you do in the war, grandmother? You can tell them some stories. Because I know. You guys know, this is Joe. This is my left hand, my right hand, my brain, everything Joe. Okay? This is Joe, the War Report Joe. You can tell them stories about what it was when you were in school, your parents were in school, when you were in college, when you made the decision to become a teacher, and all the things that have happened over the course of the year. And more so than probably most people, you can answer some of the questions that I posed earlier in terms of the course of this war. I mean, you were there when it started. You were there before, you know, the formal declaration. You can be such a source of storytelling, story sharing for not only the current teacher but potential future teachers and et cetera. I thank you, as usual, because you've taught me a lot, too, about the war because you're in the trenches.
You know, right.
I've been in the trenches, but you're there.
It's pretty amazing because I came to teaching from the business world and from American Express, actually, and had gone through a number of takeovers. And my husband, who worked for Union Carbide, had gone through a number of takeovers over, you know, in the 80s and the 90s. And I knew it. I knew it, as, you know, somewhere around 2005, 2006. I could feel that takeover thing happening. By 2010, it was obvious that this was a corporate takeover. And it was obvious, the tactics, the disruption and the disturbing and the reshuffling and changing, that this was going on. And, I mean, you look, it's pretty amazing. You look back at it 10 years, what happened in 10 years. You know, it's like a total takeover of our profession. And that, you know, and that's what they do out in the business world, is they, in order to take over the company, they have to crush the culture that was the company before they take it over. And it's horrible.
When I was putting the concept together for the War Report, I was going to use the term hostile takeover.
Uh-huh.
That we were experiencing not just a takeover, but a hostile takeover.
Yep.
From the business world. Because I, too, studied business, MBA business, BA in accounting, taxation, preparing myself to want to go into business and what have you. And as I was looking back, I was like, this is nothing but a hostile corporate takeover with the government's approval and assistance.
Yep.
It couldn't happen without the government playing at all levels, city, county, state, federal.
And if you go back and you look at all of the changes and all of the reforms, it all came from the top down. The very, not the state. It came from the federal government down. It's scary.
Jill, you've answered both directly and indirectly, you know, the questions that we put out to everyone in terms of, is there a real resistance? Has there ever been a real resistance? And if so, by who, when, where, and how? You somewhat answered that, but specifically, your take on this question of, is there a real resistance today?
There is a real resistance, but it's small groups of people around the country that are, you know, it just seems like we're kept disunited by the powers that be, you know, whether it be with the lack of mainstream media coverage, if it is, you know, groups that get infiltrated, taken over, groups that, you know, that are doing good work that get basically, you know, the work is stopped. And I don't see the resistance, but I feel it. You know, I posted on Facebook this week, just think about it. If, you know, the millions of parents who know that what is happening is wrong and the thousands of teachers that know what's happening is wrong could just unite. What a force we would be. You know, we're there. We're out there. But we're just not united. That's my answer.
Very, very well put, as usual here. I sort of like, you know, I think I know your answers to all of our questions here in terms of, are we losing war? I think you said yes. So that means it's not a standoff at this point.
No.
Are we winning a war? I think your answer was that no, but we're fighting. Who? You said there are still some people out there, individuals and groups, who are still trying to wage whatever resistance they can. And yes, in your opinion, there is a real resistance, but on my words, rather anemic at this point. What I did not say to you, Joe, and when we were putting the show together, is that, you know, we've done the end of the school year show, you know, this is our third or fourth time here, but the real impetus for this show was looking over this year. I have seen student involvement increase. I have seen student involvement in more places than there ever has been. That's what really got me thinking about this show. When we were doing shows, Joe, back in 2014, 2015, all the student involvement that we knew of was coming out of Newark.
Yep.
And a little bit that was coming out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Now there are student union groups developing all across the country. There are groups, student youth groups, that are developing outside of the school, creating their own organizations. And I'm trying my best to keep track of these organizations, because you remember, Joe, especially the students in Newark. I was in contact with some of the leadership there, and they would tell me just before they would pull the trigger on an action.
Yep.
They wouldn't say we're going to do X at 2 o'clock today or tomorrow, what have you, but they would tell me, be by the phone at 2:01 sort of thing. And they were really resisting in its truest form. And I tried to connect them with the students in Philadelphia. There were a couple students who were running for school board members. We had them on the show here. And today, Joe, there are so, I won't say so many, but there are students, so much so that my original hope was that the students would get involved, because there are tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of them compared to the number of teachers. That if we, the teachers, could mount a serious resistance, and I use this, and you probably remember, Joe, when I did my TED Talk, I said something like, we were the 100 Spartans, or the 300 mm-hmm. Spartans, standing in Theopolis Pass, and trying to hold off the enemy until the rest of the country would organize and be ready. And then I remember saying, but now I know what happened to those 300 Spartans. I don't mean that for us to happen, but that's what we're doing. We're the front guard sort of thing, waiting for the rest of the country to organize and get behind us. And I meant then in Connecticut that it would be the students. I still believe that. And I see evidence
that
of it
seems like,
today.
That seems like the miss. That's like, in my thinking, that seems like the missing link.
Oh, definitely.
If the students get activated, then the parents are naturally going to follow, and the teachers will protect. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, James. I haven't seen it, but maybe that's because I've been so, you know, enclosed in my own school year. But I will open my eyes to that, because it is very hopeful.
It's happening, and I said I'm trying to keep track of it, and would love to get involved with assisting groups to connect with each other and help them organize their focus so that they become the tip of the spear for us.
Yes.
And really, really have the skills, the knowledge, they have the motivation to become a force for us. Folks, that's what we really are talking about here, at least from my point of view, is that Joe hit it on the head, nail on the head. As you were speaking for me in terms of what I think. We're losing this war. We have been. And I said this before in terms of when we talked about neoliberalism, and I talked about Sun Tzu, the great Chinese general over 2,000 years ago, when I talked about Machiavelli and his treatise, The Prince. And when I talked about those two, their philosophies, their lessons being incorporated into the war on public education. And one of the things that I said was coming from Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu says that a good general, a great general, has won the war before he takes his first step on the battlefield. The war is over. I have said it then, and I don't hesitate saying it now. We had lost the war by the time the war started, formally. That's a hard but bitter pill for a lot of people to recognize. Now, having said that, Joe, I'm having a conversation with you. Having said that, I don't believe that we cannot get back in and make this a war. I truly believe that if we were to get our crap together, we could win. It may take some 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. I think we can win. But the way we have conducted or not conducted our part of the war, we don't have a chance. Let me share something with you too, Joe. I was put into a new group today, and I went to that group's page, a group here in Buffalo, and I read through a lot of the posting, and there was this one woman, a teacher. She was criticizing her fellow teachers. She said, there's 4,000 of us here. We just had an election. Only 700 teachers participated in the election. In other words, a quarter, a little less than a quarter, of a fifth, almost, of the teachers didn't vote, didn't participate. And she went on to say, basically, if you don't vote, you don't come to meetings, you don't do X, Y, and Z, you don't have a right to complain, as far as I'm concerned, using her voice. And I'm saying, that's exactly what I've been saying for years. Another post, gentleman was pretty much saying the same thing. I'm going, they're getting the message here that they're letting 700 people make the decision for the entire group. And within that 700 people, you got probably 100 or two who are activists making a decision for the 4,000. And then that 4,000 going into the classrooms, they are letting things happen to them by not participating and not saying, no, no way in hell. We're not going to do this. We demand something different. It's different when you have 4,000 versus 700. It's different if you have 4,000 and you have 4,000 parents. You got 8,000 saying, no, this is not going to happen. So this group that I mentioned, one of the things that they're saying now is, we, teachers, we're going to support opt-out. Well, this is 2017. When I first came to Buffalo 2015, there was no opposition in terms of teachers and parents even knowing about and participating in opt-out. 2015, 2016, 2017, there was some squeaking of the wheel, but that was about it. But now I'm seeing, hopefully, the teacher saying, we're going to get behind and support opting out. So that was encouraging, Joe, in terms of what you said earlier, that you know, there's still, you're an optimist. And yep. Whereas I'm known as being, well, I'm known as being a pessimist, but I consider myself a realist. Joe, we're coming to the end. Last words.
Oh, I'm just glad it's the summer and we can recoup and regenerate and rebuild and try to come back really strong next year. James.
That's my Joe, forever the optimist. Okay, folks, wish more people had called in, but Joe calling in was fabulous. Thank you, Joe. Love it when you do.
You're
call
welcome.
In. And we will be back next week, and this summer we're going to go in somewhat different direction. I'm going to try and spend a lot of time on educational technology. Joe, you mentioned it earlier in terms of not having teachers in the room anymore after a while, if they get their way. No relationship between student and teacher. And as I mentioned last week and a couple other times, kids will be hugging their computers as opposed to hugging their teachers. We're going to talk about, I want to talk about that extensively over the summer. I also want to talk some more about the notion of social justice, a lot about the school-to-prison pipeline, and some other topics over the 10 to 12 weeks that we have for the summer. Then next week is a holiday weekend, so I'll be back. I don't know if you will be back. So with that in mind, Joe, thank you from the bottom of my heart. And everyone else, thank you too, if you're there listening. And we will be back next week. Have a good rest of your Sunday.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.